guess what we'd like to talk about today is your vision for the next 15 to 20 years, I guess, until 2020 for Australia, and what we can do to turn our electricity generation system more renewable, take us off the carbon, basically.
Yes, I'm focusing on 2020 because I think there's a great need for urgent action to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. And if we only focus on long-term targets like 2050, nothing will happen. So I've moved my focus there. But of course, between now and 2020, we also have to be building the technologies and the industries for beyond 2020. But just focusing on what we can do in the immediate future, first and foremost is using energy more efficiently. So there is a huge potential in Australia for cutting energy wastage, and some experts are now calculating that we could reduce our per capita energy use by 50% within a matter of a few years, certainly well before 2020. And we could do that and save quite a lot of money at the same time. So the economic savings from implementing a substantial energy efficiency program can be then used to pay for a large part of the additional costs of building up renewable sources of energy, wind power, bioenergy, solar energy, and so on. So energy efficiency is number one in terms of low cost, and that's followed with solar hot water, which is pretty well cost-effective in most of Australia now, taking into account the government's rebates for solar hot water. But still in Australia, only 5% of households have solar hot water systems, which is really a terrible performance. Really, we have potential for probably about three-quarters of our households to go solar. So what we need to do is set up the organisational structure, the incentives, and also the disincentives to use off-peak electric hot water, which is offered to people at huge subsidies. And of course, off-peak electric hot water is heated by coal-fired power stations. If we got rid of that, we could close down several coal-fired power stations in Australia. So solar hot water together with gas hot water for those who don't have sunshine on their roofs, and for those who don't have sun or gas, electric heat pump hot water, which is a far more efficient use of electricity for heating water than the conventional electric resistance heating. So solar hot water is number two. And both energy efficiency and solar hot water can reduce our demand for electricity, which is currently, 80 to 85% of our electricity comes from burning coal, which is the biggest greenhouse gas polluter by far in Australia. Now, on the supply side, I'm going to discuss some renewable energy sources in the order, starting with the lowest cost ones and then sort of working upwards. So the lowest cost renewable energy source for electricity generation is currently wind power, and averaged over the last 20 years, wind power has been the fastest growing electricity technology in the world, although of course it started from a very small base. So wind power currently supplies 100,000 megawatts of electricity worldwide, and it's growing at about 25% per year. So it is an incredibly successful technology, and despite the anti-wind propaganda that is disseminated by the nuclear industry and the coal industry, wind power is actually one of the most environmentally sound sources of electricity in the world.
Could you explain the link to us there between the wind and industry and the nuclear industry, perhaps? Because I mean, you often hear some very strange claims about wind power. I've heard things as strange as wind power affecting fetuses of cows and things. I mean, where do some of these kind of myths come from?
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of myths, mostly either totally untrue or wildly exaggerated about wind power. And certainly the claim about affecting cow fetuses is untrue. The claim that wind power produces bushfires is totally untrue. There's never been a case. There are, obviously, care has to be taken to site wind farms in appropriate areas, and they are not sited in national parks, and obviously there need to be constraints on siting them in other sensitive areas like wetlands, and so avoiding bird kills, for example. But where do all these myths and exaggerations originate? Well, the peak organisation, the peak anti-wind organisation in the world is called Country Guardian. And the vice president of Country Guardian is, or at least was until recently, Sir Bernard Ingham, who just happened to be the head of the main nuclear power promoting body in the UK. And Country Guardian is based in the UK. So wind power and nuclear power in the UK are competing for the British renewable energy, they're competing for the British greenhouse targets, and they're the main technologies. So Country Guardian, with its close relationship to the nuclear industry, is sending out all this misinformation all around the world that is used by anti-wind groups in Australia and elsewhere. But really, it's not objective information. I mean, people who don't like the look of wind turbines are perfectly entitled to express their view and their taste, but they're not entitled to misrepresent the science and the engineering and the environmental impacts of wind power, because these are well understood. We now have quite a lot of experience from around the world, and wind power probably is the cleanest or the second cleanest electricity generating technology in the world. The only competitor right now would be solar photovoltaic cells, and there are some environmental impacts from photovoltaics from the manufacturing process because some toxic materials are used.
And so until 2020 we're looking at energy efficiency mostly to take down not only our demand for electricity but also the costs associated with that, but that's likely to offset the costs, any increased cost of renewable energy, you think?
That's right. I think that the economic savings from renewable energy can offset quite a large part of the additional costs of renewable energy. Not all of them as we go on, but a large part. And then we add to that solar hot water, which under the current circumstances is really, in most parts of Australia, is cost neutral. So then wind power, number one of the renewable supply technologies, number one in terms of low cost. Probably number two in the short term is some forms of bioenergy. And this is energy from organic material, from crops and crop residues. But I'm mainly thinking of generating from the residues of existing crops. And Australia, turns out, actually has a huge amount of residues from the sugar industry, from the wheat industry, from the plantation forest industry. There are wet organic wastes, there are weeds. There is actually quite huge potential in Australia. And using these residues means that we're not actually using any additional land. So we're not competing with food production in this case. Of course, if we wanted to substitute for all of our petrol and diesel with biofuels generated from crops, then we would be competing with food, and that's a far more difficult issue. And for that reason, I mainly think that in the next 10-15 years, most of our motor vehicle substitutes will actually be electric vehicles, and they'll be charged from the electricity grid, and that grid will be becoming greener and greener as more and more renewable energy is used to generate power in the grid.
Well, a big part of this planet and similar ideas is not only the implementation of renewable energy, but also trying to, I guess, wean ourselves off coal-fired power, as you said, which accounts for 85% of Australia's electricity generation. What kind of moves or what kind of policies are you seeing at the moment coming out of the government? Are you seeing any movements that are actually possibly looking at implementing strategies to start weaning us off coal-fired power?
Well, really, the simplest strategy would be to start with a ban on all new conventional coal-fired power stations, because each one that is built will emit millions of tons, sometimes tens of millions of tons, of carbon dioxide into the atmosphere every year for 40 years or more. And as these coal-fired power stations are built and brought online, that will undermine any serious energy efficiency programs. Because of the huge cost of coal power, there is no way that the developers would accept major energy efficiency programs. You can imagine a new coal-fired power station coming online and not having any market to sell its electricity to pay off the huge debts that are incurred in building that power station. So the simplest, which unfortunately our governments will be very reluctant to implement, is simply to ban conventional coal-fired power stations, at least the new ones, and also to ban major refurbishments of existing ones. Now, the federal government, rather, is going for an emissions trading scheme, or I think it's renamed this as a carbon pollution reduction scheme or something like that. But unfortunately, all the indicators are that that will not have any effect, initially at least, for the first few years, to discourage the coal-fired power, because basically this involves issuing permits to emit, and the whole idea of emissions trading scheme is to issue fewer permits than there are currently emissions, and that in theory should drive up the price of permits and make those emitters who can easily reduce their emissions sell permits to those who have more difficulty. And so the theory, the economic theory, is that this is an optimal way of cutting emissions. But in practice, the federal government has issued a green paper which suggests that they're going to issue free emission permits to the biggest greenhouse polluter of all, coal-fired electricity. And that really defeats the purpose of the whole exercise. Well, it doesn't defeat the purpose of the coal industry, because once they have free permits, these permits will have a value. And they will charge consumers the value of these free permits, even though they receive them free. I mean, you can imagine, if you're fortunate enough to inherit a house worth $500,000, say, you're not going to put it on the market for $0. It's, even though you got it for free, it's it has a value in the market. So the problem is that with the current scheme, people will all be paying more for their energy, but that payment will go to the big polluters. It won't come back to the community. Now, really what should be happening is the government should auction the permits so that, and then collect the money, collect that revenue from auctioning the permits, and feed that back into the society, first to help people, particularly low-income earners, to reduce their emissions, and also to help the transition generally to a clean, energy-efficient, renewable energy future. They will have tens of billions of dollars if they auction the permits. So this is a wonderful opportunity which, as a result of lobbying by our very powerful vested interests that are greenhouse gas emitters, we are in danger of losing that opportunity.
What do you feel is going to take over, I guess, after 2020 in terms of our electricity generation?
Well, right now, solar power is still very expensive, but there are huge technological advances and scientific advances taking place right now. So we know that in the future, it's going to be much, much cheaper. So right now, we should be preparing the way with research and development and with market development to build up solar energy so that after 2020, it can really make the huge contribution to our clean energy future that it has the potential to make. So I would say that beyond 2020, we'll have two forms of solar electricity becoming really big. Solar photovoltaic modules, which we see on a few roofs right now around Australia, generating electricity, but also solar power stations based mainly on concentrating the sunlight and using the heat produced to generate steam, to turn a turbine, to generate electricity. And these solar thermal electric systems have a huge advantage in that it's fairly cheap to store the heat as opposed to electricity. And so storing the heat means that solar thermal electricity will be 24 hours a day power. The other main technology that I expect to play a big role after 2020 is called hot rock geothermal power. And this is tapping the heat of the earth from 3 to 5 kilometres down to, again, produce steam to generate electricity. And I think at the beginning of 2009, we will see the first small electricity generation from hot rock geothermal, but this will build up gradually, and after 2020, this will be a seriously large source of electricity of